Bill Mayhula.
And for this purpose, you're the attorney for Na'iaupuni.
I am. Mm-hmm. Na'iaupuni, the five directors, decided, you know what, we're just going to commit ourselves to providing this process, to provide an opportunity for Native Hawaiians to vote in their leaders, to go to a convention and discuss Native Hawaiian self-governance. We're providing that process. Correct, correct. And in fact, you know, the rights of indigenous people to form their own nation, they have the right to freely do so without interference of state or federal government. That's basically the law. So this is actually the only way to do it. This actually is consistent with the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, which was in 2010 adopted by the Obama administration. In the last 30 years, there's been a lot of grassroots development of their own constitutions. We're going to have all of those available to the delegates. And our intention of having this week of instruction is to give everyone sort of a baseline as to what the experts say, what are the general rules, so that when the delegates start to talk, everyone sort of knows the same sort of information. And that's why we thought it would be good for everyone to have this baseline of information.
Will the public be involved at all in that education process?
Yeah, and if they come up with a recommendation to the Native Hawaiian people, then our organization will put on a ratification vote or referendum. And then the Native Hawaiian people can decide for themselves whether or not they approve of this recommendation of the delegates or not.
Do you feel you've got a representative spread of the Hawaiian population?
Yes, that was definitely one of the things that that was one of our goals, our initial goals, was to make sure that the delegates that are offered to the voters represent a good cross-section of the Native Hawaiian community. We have kingdom people, those who want independence. We have those who want federal recognition. We have those who want to hear others and decide for themselves. We have those who believe this is more of a process. So we've got a really good cross-section of leaders, which is exactly what we wanted. I think one of the things that Native Hawaiians have been missing from not having a government is you have disparate groups and leaders out there that just announce their views to the press, but they don't really have an opportunity to debate it among other Native Hawaiian leaders, and then to test their views with Native Hawaiian voters, you know? So, you know, that's one of the reasons why we're really passionate about this process and really hopeful that the Kingdom people and the Independence people and the TMT people, and they're the guys that express their views. It's almost like the silent majority is clearly that. They've been silent. Who knows what their views are? So that's one aspect of it. The other aspect of it is that when you go to a convention like this, it's not how many numbers you have. It's what leader you put forward. You know, I tell people about when John Wahei went to the 1978 Constitutional Convention, nobody knew of him. But look what he was able to convince those delegates of, and then shortly thereafter, they were able to pass all of these constitutional amendments among all of the voters of the state of Hawaii. That's one of the things I'm excited about, is who knows who's going to emerge from this convention as that sort of leader. But there is a lawsuit that's been filed to stop our process, and there's going to be a motion for preliminary injunction heard on October 20th, you know, a few days or 10 days before the election, and the judge intends to rule on that motion before the election. It's brought by plaintiffs who are associated with the Grassroots Institute. And so, you know, it's a complicated lawsuit, but the main claim in the lawsuit is that our process violates the 15th Amendment and the 14th Amendment, sort of the same as a Rice versus Cayetano sort of situation. But our situation is a lot different in the sense that our election is a private one. It's not for a state government position or a federal government position. And so the 15th Amendment and the 14th Amendment, we contend, do not apply to our situation. And this Department of Interior proposed rule strengthens our position that our process is not illegal and does not violate the Constitution. I think one of the things that I think is sort of behind the scenes is the claim to the ceded lands, the 1.8 million acres taken from the Hawaiian Kingdom and transferred to the United States at the time of annexation. What is Native Hawaiian's claim to that, and what's going to happen with that claim? And the fact is that until Native Hawaiians have a government, they don't have an entity that has standing to assert that claim. So one of the benefits of having a Native Hawaiian government is that that government would then have standing to assert that claim. Number one, we talked a little bit about just the benefits of Native Hawaiians having their own government so that as a group they can decide what direction they want to move in. So I think that is a great benefit from it. The second benefit, if a government is formed, that government is at least going to have standing to say, we represent all of Native Hawaiians. We can assert rights and claim benefits, and no one can say, well, they lack standing, which is a big defense to any kind of Native Hawaiian lawsuit.
Is there any way that that standing could be attacked once it's established?
That's where recognition comes in. So if federal recognition is granted, then the federal government is saying this entity has standing. If the state government grants it, the state government is saying this entity has standing. If the United Nations recognizes this government as an international government, then the world would have to acknowledge that it has standing. When you have a Native Hawaiian government, then all of these 14th Amendment equal protection claims sort of fall by the wayside. And it's with that standing that then comes, you know, the wide range of potential benefits to Native Hawaiians.
What would you say non-Hawaiians need to know on this subject?
Yeah. You know, I don't think the majority of non-Hawaiians who live in the state have great fear about this, because Native Hawaiians, by nature, are very inclusive, you know, and very few of us are full Hawaiian blood right now, anyway. And so, you know, I just think that's in our DNA, that we're a sharing people, and we're going to make it work. You know, it's a complicated thing as far as what happened from the time of the 1893 overthrow to where we are today. You know, you just can't ignore all of that stuff. And I think that's where, I think if the Native Hawaiian people come together as a group and decide what they want to do, then I think at that point, you know, they're going to be in a better position to express to the rest of the people here what their position is and why it is, and hear from them, and then go on. So we've talked a lot about the delegates coming together and making a proposal to the Native Hawaiians. But the next big process after that is, what is the education on that proposal and the input from not only Native Hawaiian voters, but non-Native Hawaiians in the state? I mean, they're going to be part of that dialogue as to whether or not this proposal is going to be ratified or not. So, you know, that's
convene another aha.
Or maybe, you know, I mean, that's why I say, I mean, it could be that this is the start of a multiple process to reach some sort of government. It could be, you know.